97.5, 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It is your Ute Preview Show. Hans is down in Las Vegas getting you ready for the game. Frank Dolce and myself are hanging out here at Tim Daly Infinity, 4550 South State Street. You come on by, we got jazz gear. Also, look, you might as well just come do a little Christmas shopping. Come by, grab a piece of gear, whether it's a sweatshirt, whether it's a hat, and you're good to go. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Scotty. It smells so festive.
Hi, Frank.
In here. Oh, Hans is joining
us.
Yeah,
Hans is.
That's so strange.
Yeah.
Because he's not here right now.
He's here in voices here.
I was under the impression that when you're out of town, then you can't join the show.
Well, if you've got one of these equipment boxes, then you can join the show.
Oh. It's been made clear to me that if I'm ever out of town, that I can't. Well, that's debatable.
Stop. You know you're always invited to be on the show. You're always invited to be on the show. It's just sometimes doing 2 hours with you on the phone can be a little bit difficult.
Overwhelming.
And you're so insistent because you like the game of soccer more than you like the game of football.
Oh, that's funny. People don't think you're funny, but you are. You have a terrific sense of humor. I'm just happy. The thing is, I just like being with you guys. I like. This is one of my very favorite things to do weekly during the football season. And so it's disappointing for me when I am told that I can't participate.
So did I tell you earlier in the week we weren't doing a show?
You said when we talked on Tuesday.
It was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday. We talked on Tuesday. You said, hey, you know, there's no preview show this week, so and Hans is out of town. Can you join me for an hour or two today? And so
I don't remember saying that. But I'm sure I'm not denying that I did.
And so I was thinking to myself, oh, well, absolutely. If there's no preview show this week, then for sure I'll join you today. I would have joined you anyway if there was a preview show. And so I'm extraordinarily happy to know that there's a preview show today because there's a lot to talk about with this football team. And we didn't really get to talk about Utah football because we were talking about all the other stuff that was happening
because
the Pac-12.
Yeah, but it was a crazy day in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
But now we get a chance to talk nothing but Utah football for the next 2 hours.
That's unbelievable. That's amazing. I can't wait.
Hey, Hans, are you seeing a bunch of is there a bunch of U gear down there? Is there some people who have made the trip?
Yeah, there are. I've already seen quite a few. There's actually a pretty good number here at this Palms Hotel and Casino. So,
and by Palms, he means
I've probably seen 20, maybe 25 shirts, hats, Utah fans. I have not seen any Oregon fans yet, but plenty of Utah fans. And no, Scotty, I don't even know what that is. Is that a zoo?
Yes.
Is that like Bear World? Because yep. I don't even know. Is that the Vegas Zoo? Quite a few Utah fans.
Just say hello to Dennis Rodman for us.
Oh, yeah, that's his jam.
That is his place. Well,
does he live here in Vegas?
Well,
might as well.
This is like a second home.
He does help the local economy, that's for sure.
Yeah, he supports the local economy. There's no doubt about that. So, Hans and Scotty, I've been getting interesting feedback about this game. And, I'll certainly tell you what I think about the game. But do you guys have a sense of where people lie on this one? Is it more of, well, it's really hard to beat a team twice kind of crowd? Or is it there's just no way Utah can manage Oregon this second time around? Or is it, well, Oregon just didn't show very well. They're just a much better team.
I'm getting a lot of trepidation from
people Utah
I talked to. Yeah, from Utah fans that are a little nervous about this one because they want to go all in. They want to feel like, all right, bam, let's go. Let's win this thing. And I felt like, wasn't Utah favored against Oregon in 2019 going into that game?
And they got housed. I mean, it was like
they got beat up pretty good.
They got beaten up. They got blown out at the line of scrimmage, like in ways that we haven't seen Utah get blown out. So that was tough to watch. And Utah's favorite in this one.
Yes.
In Vegas.
Yeah.
So are you getting the same response, Hans?
A little bit, yeah. But I would say there's also an overwhelming sense of the level of dominance Utah had in that game against Oregon, and people feel like, well, and it's hard for me to not kind of rest in that area, believing that the way Utah beat Oregon is repeatable, that it doesn't matter what adjustments Oregon makes. If Utah makes some subtle adjustments off of the run game and the personnel usage that they had, then they should be able to combat and confuse anything that Oregon is trying to do defensively and still have some level of success, because you don't have a one-dimensional quarterback. You don't have a one-dimensional team. This is actually a two-dimensional style offense that has high levels of ability both the run and the passing. So I think Utah can make adjustments, and I think
we may have lost our guy there for a second. But from your perspective, when you look at this Oregon team and you see how good this team can be, was the Utah game more of just an anomaly for them, or the fact that you feel like Utah is just a more dominant team over Oregon? And that's because, you know, look, if it was just a weird, you know, everybody has a bad day at the office. And if it was just an Oregon bad day at the office, then Oregon should be back and should make this game really close. If it's just the fact that Utah is just that much dominant physically on the line of scrimmage than Oregon, then we might have a repeat of what we saw a couple of weeks ago.
But I do believe that Utah can make a lot of adjustments off of that, because Oregon is going to put in an extra big. They have to. They're going to bring an extra big. Now Utah's going to have to make some adjustments off of that.
Well,
go ahead.
So to answer that, Scotty, as well, I certainly think there's a better Oregon football team than what showed against Utah a couple of weeks ago. But this is also an Oregon football team that I thought should have taken another loss prior to playing Utah. Like, I don't think they've been a dominant football team this year. They certainly did not appear to me as the number three team in the nation as they were listed at one point. So that's something to consider. Like, this isn't a dominant Oregon football team. I think they're going to give a much better effort Friday in Las Vegas. I think we're probably going to see this time around what we thought we would see the first time around, a much more competitive contest. But I still think, and you tell me if you think differently, Hans, a performance by Utah versus an A performance by Oregon, I still give Utah that game. I think Utah wins that game. I think Utah's going to have to make, like, Oregon's going to have to play well, and Utah's going to have to make some mistakes for Oregon to come out on top. But I think if both teams are at the top of their game, I think Utah is a more complete team top to bottom.
Well, I'll go ahead and answer that. I think you're looking at a situation right now where you've got – I agree with you. And I think if both teams play their best game, then Utah wins this game. And I think it's pretty simple. I think you've got better quarterback play. I think you've got better line play on offense and the defensive side of the ball. And I think you're in a situation right now where things are just lining up nicely here for Utah. Now, if Utah plays a B game and Oregon plays their A game, then Oregon's going to win that game.
Yes, no question.
The margins are pretty razor thin between these two teams.
Have you looked through, I mean, if you're talking about what I'm talking about,
yeah,
if you look through the stats throughout the year, and now we have a terrific sample size, it's like they are so close, closely aligned in all of these categories that I think Utah still has a slight advantage statistically. I also think that Oregon is probably still the most athletic team in the conference. But I do think they have, a glaring weakness that is difficult to overcome.
Yeah,
and that's in a critical position group on the football field.
Yep, and also too, I think you're looking at a situation here where you've got a Utah team that is a lot of these. I mean, I don't know. I haven't gone through a roster breakdown. I don't know how many guys were on the 19 team that are on this year's team. There's got to be a good number of them. And they realize that they let one get away in 2019. So I can't imagine there'll be one of those games where you had that weird emotional letdown where they're like, well, for some reason, these guys didn't come to play. And I get it. You're dealing with the dumbest demographic in the country in men 18 to 24 years old. Like, I get it. There's really no rhyme or reason why they're ready to play and why they're not ready to play. But I can't imagine that happens. Can you?
Go ahead, Hans.
Well, I was just thinking that the one area, guys, that I don't know if you're going to get what you got in game one against Oregon is special teams. I don't know if you're going to get seven points from Britain and block 3 points goal. That's the one area I can't count on for Utah is special teams. So if it's going to play the other way, it's going to have something to do with Utah's special teams.
I think so, too. If Utah has a special teams disaster like they did against Oregon State and they had against Arizona but still figured out a way to win that game, then it's I don't think it goes the right way for Utah. And so just to me, you know, return game is fine. I have no concern about the return game for Utah. It's the kicking game in both phases, like field goals.
Yep.
And punting. Punting especially has been a disaster, a complete disaster. So if those things aren't operating at a high level, then it could be that could make the difference. I mean, that's just like a turnover. If you give up a blocked punt, that's just a turnover. And especially if Utah has this propensity to give it up for six, a blocked punt for 6 points, that just doesn't work out.
It's almost like the message is, if you're going to give up a block kick, can we please not let it go for a touchdown?
Touchdown,
please.
Yeah. No, how crazy is that? I mean, in all of Coach Whittingham's career, it's just such a rarity to see that. First of all, a block kick, and then secondly, for it to go for a touchdown. So I think that's a huge area of concern. Another area of concern for me, Hans, is that I didn't feel like Oregon was necessarily committed to the run game. Like, I mean, you have a couple of really good backs, Cardwell and Dye and then Anthony Brown, you know, the quarterback run game is really good. Utah game planned against that really well. But I don't know that Oregon was as committed to the run. Between their two top guys, they have 13 rushes in that football game. That seems soft for a team that wants to run the ball. And maybe Utah just took them out of the run game. But it felt more to me like Oregon wasn't really committed to it.
Well, Utah gets that 28-0 lead in the first half of that game, and I think they came out in the third quarter and thought, we got some catching up to do, and I think it did take them out of their game. I actually think it took them out of their game when they got to 21-0 and switched Oregon's mindset. And you're absolutely right. They had to vacate it, and 60 yards of rushing for Oregon is unacceptable. And I think that Oregon – okay, so, Scotty, I was telling you that I was laying in my bed last night after having gone over this a couple of different directions, and I was thinking about this game. I'll tell you where I think this could be different. I could see Oregon committing 100%. Looking at what Oregon State did and looking at what San Diego State did and saying, we're going to have to do something similar, and we're going to have to – add an extra blocker, we're going to add an extra power back, and we are not going to vacate this run. We're not going to give up 3 points on a blocked field goal. We're not going to give up 7 points on a punt return. We're going to be more focused on a run, to your point, Frank, and we're going to dominate this game physically. If they're going to win it, they've got to come in and own it physically. And I've got to imagine that Mario right now is thinking, we're going to come in and own the run game. And Frank, yeah, to your point, yes, they vacated. They had to. They've got themselves quite a ways behind, and they put too much weight on Anthony Brown and his ability or inability to be able to throw the football. They can't rely on that anymore. They've got to run.
Well, and that's, you know, what's his name, James Crapio or Crapio, whatever, the guy that joined us yesterday. Sorry.
Crapio?
Crapio. Anyway, he... He mentioned yesterday that he's like, well, they never could run. You know, they got down so fast you can't run the football. I'm like,
I don't know if I buy that.
It didn't get away from them immediately.
That's a crappy take.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can't go away from your bread and butter. I mean, Cristobal, maybe Moorhead has more faith in the passing game, and certainly Anthony Brown showed well against Oregon State, like 23 of 28, super efficient throwing the ball. He did have a lot of guys who were kind of wide open, and he had his receivers make some plays for him. But I throughout the year, I just don't think he's demonstrated the reliability that you need from the quarterback position if you're going to have to throw the ball 30 or 35 times a game. That just doesn't seem like his – where he's comfortable. So, eliminating the quarter – I still think the formula is the same. You have to stop the run – eliminate the quarterback run game and force Oregon to try and throw the ball downfield. And it's certainly easier to do that if you can generate a lead like Utah did a couple weeks ago. That's the formula. I don't know that Utah will be able to generate that lead. I suspect that Oregon will be a more balanced attack on Friday. And so that to me lends itself to a closer game. A game like we thought we would see the first time, but even with that, even with Oregon making those improvements and making those adjustments, I still think that if Utah plays the way that we've seen them play this year at specific times, that they win that game. Utah's best versus Oregon's best, I think, is an advantage for Utah.
Okay, so Frank, if Oregon does everything they can schematically to take away Utah's run game, can Cam Rising beat them with the throw game?
I think Cam can, yes. He'll have to be better than he was against Arizona. He'll have to be better than he was against Colorado. I think those were two efforts that were lacking. But he has the ability to be better. And he has three weapons that are very difficult to manage. You know the guys I'm talking about, Hans. And so if you're going to try and – you tell me, if you're a defensive coordinator and you look across the line of scrimmage and there's Keithy and Kincaid and Fotheringham and it's a passing down, what do you do? How do you match up those three guys? How do you cover up all three of those guys? I don't know. What's the answer?
Well, you can't run a man situation with him. You're going to have to zone him out. And you're going to have to leave an extra man in zone because they're really efficient in their routes. So that makes it really difficult. The thing that makes it even more difficult is most looks off those tight end routes come off some type of bump or chip or block look. Mm-hmm. It's a play action look from the tight end before they go into route, and that makes it really difficult as a defender to get any type of man coverage on them because, you pressure into a situation and then Cam Rising forces a defender's hand and then flips it to – I can't remember. I think that was Colorado, wasn't it, where he forced the defender off of man coverage and then flipped it out to – was it Tavian Thomas or Brant Keithy? I can't remember, but they do make it really difficult that way. But I can't help but think, because I've heard this speech before, where we faced a team the year before and they got us physically, or we've watched film and they've beat the last two teams physically, and the coaching staff comes in, defensive coordinators come in, and your position coach comes in, and when they start to get ready for scheming against the team, they say, I can tell you what we're not going to do. We're not going to lose physically. We are not going to get pushed around, and we're not going to get beat up, and we're not going to let them beat us with the run. And I can hear Oregon. I could hear Mario Cristobal as a former offensive lineman. I could hear him saying that to his defensive coordinators, and I can hear his defensive coordinators saying it. And I can hear them taking it serious and saying, what do we got to do to stop the run? And we're going to put it all in. And then, we'll try to run some different zones, and we'll try to cloud some areas. We know where they like to attack with those tight ends. No, we saw a wrinkle with the tight end screen, the inside tight end screen, which I thought was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, I truly believe that Oregon is going to do something unique, and I'll be watching it from the very first snap. They're going to do something unique to stop the run. And I don't think that Utah is going to have 208 yards of rushing in this game like they had in game one against Oregon. I don't believe it. I can't. If they do, it's a win. If they get to 200 yards rushing, it's a win. Oregon is going to have to do to Utah what Utah did to them. Hold them at that 80 mark. Well, they held Oregon at the 60 mark, but hold them at the 80 mark or the 90 mark and force them off their marks and really check and see if that freshman quarterback can beat them with his arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Oregon has the ability and Mario has the wherewithal and the sense to organize that. And so that's why I asked the question, can Cam Rising beat him with his arm? Because I think in the second half, he's going to have to force them out of some of those big looks
mm-hmm.
so they can start sneaking that run game.
Yeah, I agree. You have to assume in this one that Oregon is going to be better against Utah's run game. You just have to make that assumption. That's probably going to be the case. And I agree with you. If it's been the case all year long. When Utah runs the ball well, then they win. And so if Utah gets up to that 200-yard mark, then that's clearly, in my mind, a win for the Utes. So you have to assume Oregon's going to take away the run game. They're going to put more of it on the shoulders of Cam Rising. I think Cam Rising has the ability to keep a defense honest, and maybe throughout the game, maybe not initially, but throughout the game, the run game starts to generate some yardage. And then on the other side, I think you just have to assume that Oregon is going to be more proficient in the run game, and they're going to figure out how to make Anthony Brown proficient in the run game, because it was clear that they couldn't rely on him in the pass game the first time with Utah.
We got to take a quick break. Come back. We're live here at Tim Daly Infinity. Tons of Jazz gear up for grabs. You want to come by and grab some gear for yourself or a family member and then pretend like you paid a lot of money for it when they open it up at Christmas? We can do that. Just stop by 4550 South State Street. It's Tim Daly Infinity with some vehicles, with some 0% options, some lease options, some used inventory, the forever warranty. There's plenty of opportunities to get in one of these rides. It's Tim Daly Infinity right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
For Kyle Whittingham and the Utes, it all comes down to this. It's the Pac-12 championship game in Las Vegas as the Utes look to claim their first ever Pac-12 title. The Zone Sports Network will be in Las Vegas with nonstop blow-out-the-budget coverage of the Utes as they battle Oregon for a spot in the Rose Bowl. Your home for the best coverage of the Utes in the Pac-12 championship game is right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
.97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. It is your Ute preview show, counting you down to kickoff. Utah and Oregon, the Pac-12 championship game. Crazy season. Ant Zolson, by the way, Frank Dolchamp, Scott Gerard. You go back to earlier in the year, a loss to BYU, a loss to San Diego State. Never really felt like we'd be here at this point, but found a way to right the ship for sure.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
I think that we talked about that team. Like, I was worried they were going to get to 500.
Yeah.
Yep. They just looked out of sorts, and they looked out of sorts in all the wrong places. Like, offensive line. How many mental mistakes? Well, there were mistakes. I don't know if we could call them mental or physical, but I think we leaned toward mental mistakes. In that second or third game, you broke down that film, and it was just all over the offensive line. People were going in the wrong direction.
I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe the level of mistakes. It was, there were physical, but it was mostly mental because you had so many guys popping free. And it actually started against Weber State. Now, I know that they beat Weber State 40-17, but Weber State got a couple of licks in there. they got some pressures, and you could see that their defense was popping free based off scheme. BYU took advantage of it. San Diego State even took more advantage of it, and they ended up 1-2 in those first three games, and a lot of that had to do with Utah's offensive line. And they are the biggest flip. I guess the quarterback position would be the biggest flip because you had a complete personnel change midway through the San Diego State game. But as far as your personnel that picked up their performance, I'd say Utah offensive line won, and then I'd say Utah defensive line jumping from like 112th in sacks per game all the way up in the top five in sacks per game. They're number one in the Pac-12. They've got the Pac-12 sack leader in Mika Tafua. And, you know, going into that game last week, they were 14th in the country at 3.1 sacks per game. So their defensive line, I think, was second. Devin Lloyd's just been a constant. He hasn't changed. He's been the same Devin Lloyd all year long, but those lines have definitely changed.
Have you seen enough of Kayvon Thibodeau to evaluate him relative to Devin Lloyd? Because there was a big thing that came out this week, and Thibodeau was named as a Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. And I think statistically...
That better be Devin.
Statistically, Devin Lloyd was better, but yeah. Pro Football Focus, that's right. But Devin Lloyd was not named the Defensive Player of the Year. Thibodeau was named as the Defensive Player of the Year. And your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Pro Football Focus has a real, I won't say the word, but for Oregon. They just, it's a love affair. And they can't get them off their mind. And so forget those guys. They obviously they don't know football. I don't know if it's a bunch of geeks pressing buttons back there, but it's garbage.
It is. That is.
Kayvon Thibodeau is not your Pac-12. It is Devin Lloyd, and it is not even a question. What he's done has been so impressive. But I want to go back to a conversation that Scotty and I had when we started the show out, and I mentioned one of the things that was running through my mind last night as I was thinking about this game. The other thing that was running through my mind was Kayvon Thibodeau. Now that you bring it up, Frank, I don't expect Utah to be able to do what they did against Kayvon Thibodeau in game one for two reasons. Number one, as a defensive coordinator, you can't have your best defender completely taken out of a game. Now, offense gets last say in audible calls. Defense, in when that ball is snapped, no matter what you think you know with strengths and lineups, formations, depths, no matter what you think you know which way the ball is going to roll, the offense has the last say in audibles. So Utah can get the last say in running away from Thibodeau. They didn't run away from Thibodeau every time. They ran away from Thibodeau maybe 50, 60% of the time. But when they ran at Thibodeau, they had it all squared away with different chip looks. And I talked about how they were slicing the running back through kind of like his right through his hips and through his abs. And they were just running through it. You know, they weren't stopping to block. They were cutting him, but not cutting him at the legs. They were cutting him right at the stomach area. And the offensive line then was able to get right in front of him. It was a great design. I believe that Oregon has to look at that film and say, we can't have that. They took him out, and they went offensively. They were able to sustain possessions and sustain drives, and we can't have that. I think Kayvon Thibodeau rises to the occasion and has a better game, and I think Oregon finds ways to get him more involved in the defensive scheme based on what they saw in game one. So I'm expecting a better game from Thibodeau, but I still don't expect him to be able to control and dominate.
Okay, so that was my question, Hans, is so they scheme it right and he plays a better game. How much of an impact does that make to Utah's offense? It doesn't sound like you think it's a deal breaker there.
No, because if Utah is doing their homework, and that is one of my fears with this game, if Bam Olesinyi or Braden Daniels or Thomas or Keithy or anybody else that at any point blocked, chipped, cut, anything, sealed on Kayvon Thibodeau, if they if they're going into this game thinking, ha, 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 we've got this just like we had it 2 weeks ago, you cannot think that way. You can't, because he's too much of a competitor and Oregon is too crafty and smart to just think that they're going to let you do that. If I'm Kayvon Thibodeau, I learned a lot from game one, and I can promise. And, Frank, you know this from being the quarterback position, and you've watched a safety jump your route a couple times. You've got tricks in your bag to punk that safety and to get yours. And as a defensive tackle, I had things that I could do. Oh, okay, so I'm playing against Air Force. Well, I know this guy. I know what he's going to do. So when he cuts me, I'm going to throw my knee so hard in his lower back that he's not going to be able to move. And I'll do it two or three times, and then the guy stops. Because it sucks for him. Really good defenders have tricks in their bag. And Thibodeau, if it goes the way it went, then, and we still have these geeks voting for Thibodeau as defensive player of the year in the Pac-12, I'll find their office and I'll go down and knock on it with a pitchfork and a torch and storm the castle. Because that's just ridiculous. If he is who the NFL says he is, if he is who the Pac-12 has projected him to be, then expect him to be able to take on those cuts. Expect him to stem. And I'm just going off the way I would use him, guys. I would stem him seconds before the snap so that they can't audible into him or away from him based on his formation. Not only would I stem him from shades, I would stem him from strengths. So I would take him from whatever strength, and I would do a quick rotation just before snap where he would go completely flip to the other side. Because I can tell you as an offensive lineman, when you're getting ready to pass set and you're looking at a guy that you've just pass set on five or six times in a game, and all of a sudden he does a quick flop stem and a new defender shows up in front of you and you're like, oh crap. I just heavy set that guy four times. What am I going to do here? That's going to be a different set. So if Thibodeau all of a sudden flops over and stems and stands in front of Braden Daniels, and now you've got your H-back on the opposite side and the play clock's running down, now you get to control some things defensively. So and Oregon has to do these things. They cannot go into the game like they did 2 weeks ago, and they know it, and I know it. And if they're going to have any chance, they're going to have to do these kinds of things. I hope that they just show up and say, you know what? We believe that was a fluke. We're going to do what we did in game one, and we'll show you it's going to work in game two. If they do that, they're idiots. They're idiots, a whole lot of them. Yeah. I don't believe they're idiots. So I think we're going to see some of the gamesmanship that I'm talking about.
It does make for a very interesting matchup this second time around. Because of specifically those things, especially Thibodeau. Utah was able to control the clock, shorten the game, keep Oregon's offense off the field a little bit because their run game was so good. If those things happen again, you know, Utah runs away with it. I just don't see that happening. I do expect a much better effort from Thibodeau, because he was completely neutralized in the first game, and so was a lot of the Oregon defense, and I couldn't agree with you more. Like the challenge for Utah is that they were so dominant in the first game, and how do you rise to that level in the second game, because you have, even if you're working hard in practice and you're doing your film work and you're doing all the right things, in the back of your mind, it's just set there. Like, well, we destroyed these guys the first time.
Yep.
Why wouldn't we be able to do yep. this again? And on the other side, I mean, you have the proverbial cat backed into the corner. That's where Oregon is right now. Like they backs against the wall. They're going to come out swinging.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, but more importantly, Frank Dolce, as we are live here at Tim Daly Infinity, 4550 South State Street. You come on by, grab some jazz gear, check out these Infinities that are priced to move. We got a couple of QX80s here in the showroom, so you got to drive away with one of those bad boys. Life will be a little bit better for it. It's all right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Is unrivaled
of a job.
So what's the thing that pushes Kyle Whittingham to not be at Utah anymore?
That pushes him not to be at Utah?
Yeah.
Or to stay
at what
at
point
Utah?
Is he going to be say, you know, oh, what, I am going to be done.
When I'm retired. I don't see Kyle Whittingham going, all right, I'm going to go build another program. I don't think that he wants to do that. I think he's got this thing where it's a well-oiled machine and they got it rolling.
That is unbelievable.
Catch Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
What time is it? Hands
is
Scotty.
So grumpy. Why is he so grumpy?
I love it. Wait a second. Are we still on air?
Go Utes.
You did it. You did it.
Hey, Frank, I got a question for you.
Frankie. I actually meant to say it the other way, but
Frank.
Yes.
I want to know because you know you watched that Colorado game, and one of the things that you and I talked about in that post game was Utah's effort on fourth down. Not just, and it's not an effort question, but it's a scheme issue, and it's there's some things that need to be resolved in Utah's fourth down attempts. They're going to come across a couple of critical momentum grab moments here in Vegas. And there are going to be a couple of fourth downs where they're on their opponent's 45 or they're on the Oregon 48 or, as I said yesterday, on Oregon's 55-yard line. And so
it sounds like
do the math. I mean, that's like easy to figure out.
It's like an old Markgraf line. Is it the 45,
the
50,
the 55? 55. Yes.
Check that.
Check it.
But Frank, they have to get more efficient in their fourth down attempts. Talk about what you saw with some of their fourth down stuff. You know, you had that Cam Rising weird incompletion where he maybe could have gotten to the markers if he'd have just kept it and ran. But what do they need to do better in these fourth down situations?
I completely agree with the play calls on fourth down. I completely aligned with Coach Ludwig. Let's go for it, Coach Whittingham. Let's go for it in this situation. No problem with that at all. I'm completely aligned with the actual play calls. Like, those were the right calls. Give and you put it in the hands of your quarterback, who's been very, very reliable ever since he took over the reins. And in those two occasions, Cam Rising simply made the wrong decision twice. You know, you don't expect that, but he made the wrong decision twice. On the option, the defensive end was non-committal, and so Cam decided to turn it up. That was clearly not the right decision. He probably should have pressured the defensive end into making a decision rather than turning it up. And had he pitched it, regardless, his back was there. You know, he may have banged his head on the goalpost. There was just good blocking up front, lots of running room. So that one was just Cam Rising. The second one, the rollout, you know, run, give Cam a run pass option, and he clearly had the corner. He clearly had the sticks on the replay, and he just decided that he was going to try and throw it, and it was a terrible attempt. So everything was right. The play call was right. The execution up to the point when Cam Rising made the decisions, everything was good until that point, and then it fell apart. So I'm a lie. I think they did the right things. They just didn't get it right.
I was breaking down that fourth down play that you were talking about where Cam ended up trying to throw it back, and Scotty and I were talking about it. And Scotty, I was mentioning that the tight end actually got held up at the line of scrimmage and was delayed into his route. Otherwise, he would have been more on line with Cam. Cam wouldn't have had to throw so far back as he would have just straight downfield. But the tight end was delayed in his release, and I'm with you, Frank. If he wasn't delayed, if he didn't get hung up at the line of scrimmage, he's right there for that dish and for that touchdown. The play I was thinking about, it was actually Britton Covey, where he forced the man coverage off Britton and then flipped it to Britton.
Yeah,
that was Colorado, yes. Wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And, that was a game. So, I mean,
I'm with you.
I'm with you too.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm with me as well.
We're live here at Tim Daly Infinity, 4550 South State Street. So many great opportunities for you to get in one of these Infinities right now. They've got the brand new QX55, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan of. You got a QX80, which they've got a couple here in the showroom you can check out. And remember, you can get 0% financing. You got lease options. There's a bunch of different ways that you can help make this happen. Stop by, check it out. Also, grab yourself some jazz gear. Let's go. It's all right here at Tim Daly Infinity. What?
Let's go. Do you have a favorite model of the Infiniti? Is there a model that you have driven extensively, perchance, and then you would say,
yeah,
well,
there?
That's my favorite model of the Infiniti.
Look, I'm not picking. It's like your kids. You can't pick a favorite. You got the 80 over here that's really good. You got the 60 that's good. I don't know. The 55 might be, you know.
I would agree with you. But then, is there one in particular that you've driven extensively, perchance, that you may have more experience in?
That you have an affinity for?
That you really, that you might say fits your needs as a driver on a daily basis.
They will all do that for you. From what I hear, they're just tremendous vehicles, and they're priced to move. And look, you can afford them. Let's
so
go.
Would you say you have similar experience in all the models? Or is there a particular model
you have
more experience?
I don't have much experience at all, but I wish I could. And if I could, and if I would, it would probably be that 55, maybe that black one over there. All right, Hans and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
There we go.
And the Zone Sports Network.